Packers fans, and welcome in to the Green 19 podcast brought to you by PackersNews.com and JS Online. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. Guys, welcome back in to the podcast room.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Always good to be here with you, Cassidy.
I paid him $5 to say that, but I'm glad to know it was money well spent.
Wait, was that only five? Was that only five? No.
That's all I put in the mail. That's all you're getting. Anyways, guys, speaking of, let's get back on track here. It took approximately 30 seconds for us to get off track. Packers do hit the road again this week. It's been a tough road stretch here for them, and a tough schedule with a week 10 bye. Because of all of that, heading into a division game against a Minnesota Vikings team that is better than their record indicates, the Packers are still taking a light approach to practice this week, something that they've done the past couple of weeks. And Tom, I know you really sort of looked into this, and you've been around this franchise for a long time, so you would know better than anyone. How rare is it for a team, even in the NFL, to sort of have a 2 to 3 week stretch where it's, a lot of practices that Matt LaFleur calls, above the shoulders, no pads, just not a lot of physicality?
Well, it's not completely unprecedented, and part of it had to do with them playing a Thursday game. But I think what's been most interesting about their last couple of weeks is the absence of Aaron Rodgers from the practice field. And since that Arizona game, he's practiced once, November 1st. And that was a Monday after the Arizona game. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't practice at all leading up to the Seattle game. And so far he sat out two days, Wednesday and Thursday, with supposedly a toe injury. But I wonder if he's beat up from the game or tired after, going through COVID. I mean, he did not have much time to prepare physically for that game on Sunday.
I thought he seemed tired.
Ryan, I'm going to let you get in here, but just real quick, it's important to note that the injury report says toe, and he was asked about the toe and said it felt okay. He described his absence on Wednesday as a mental health or a mental day, just sort of needing a mental break. So how much of it do you think is that versus the toe? And then Ryan, I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, I thought he seemed tired when he spoke on Wednesday. He seemed subdued. He seemed kind of the way that he did after the Seattle game. And I asked him how he's feeling. He said that he's feeling all right, but look, he went through one heck of a rigorous illness there and got a firsthand experience of what that's like. And having not practiced since November 1st, I don't see how that can't have a toll when you go through a game and then coming out of it. So it's kind of a tricky balance, because on one hand, rest and recovery is important. And Tom, when you were speaking with Nathaniel Hackett today, who is a head coaching candidate. He's a guy that is on the radar of teams to one day lead a team himself. Mm-hmm. What did he say? He said that the two things that he's learned most from Matt LaFleur is rest and the importance of being fresh for players and just knowing what they're doing, which seems obvious, but the Packers take that to a whole extreme with their practice schedule, and they have since Matt LaFleur got here. So it's a tricky balance with Aaron Rodgers, having him be fresh and being able to recover, but needing to practice and needing to actually build up that stamina and that conditioning again, having coming on the other side of this illness.
Yeah. And it's just strange for me, for a toe injury, that he's not there, that he wasn't even around to watch the practice.
He was today though. He was today.
Oh, was he? Yeah, I did not see him.
He was today. Okay. He was not yesterday.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little bit different than maybe he got a chance to, stand behind Jordan Love and watch. But, think about it.
I was being mean. I said he could learn a lot from him.
Yeah, from Jordan Love. Yeah. It is kind of strange, too, that for 2 weeks they've prepared with Jordan Love during practice and played with Aaron Rodgers. So, going into a game at Minnesota, man, they got some challenge here especially with their offense.
He said he was going to play definitely Sunday, no matter what. But to kind of get back into this balance of what it takes that, that Tom, I know you talked about with the coaches today, as you said, this has sort of been standard with Matt LaFleur. I've always been taught if you can't tackle on Wednesday, you can't tackle on Sunday. And so you have to have some of that physicality in there. But does he seem to have a winning formula since this is technically working? And he spoke on that balance today. Where do you sort of see his mindset at as what works, what doesn't, and what's the most important aspect of a week of practice?
Well, the most important thing for him is to have Aaron Rodgers under center on Sunday. And, you know, to have probably a couple other guys in place, to have Davante Adams, to have Elgton Jenkins, and make sure that those guys are ready to play or are healthy enough to play. And it's not like he's dealing with that, just this abundance of injury, but it's just been kind of a long season.
I thought Luke Getsy made a really good point today. He kind of went back in the back in time in the memory capsule. He pulled out 2014, which obviously was the season late in that season. I didn't realize how late that game in Tampa Bay when Aaron Rodgers hurt his calf was either. It was December 21st. It was late December. Mm-hmm. I always remember it being earlier in the month, but it was late December. And when he tore his calf muscle, and as Luke Getsy said, that effectively shut down his practice for the rest of the year. He didn't practice on that thing. He went out and was able to play, and he posted something like a 130 passer rating the next week against Detroit in a game that clinched both the bye and in the division. And then they obviously had the 2-week bye and came back in the divisional round here at Lambeau Field, had a 125 rating and a win against the Dallas Cowboys. And Luke Getsy said, you know, it's not like he hasn't done this before. It's not like he can't play at a high level not practicing. He's put that on the field. So there's really no excuse there to not be able to practice.
I don't think that's a problem. I think the problem is with everybody else.
But the Packers offense still played at a pretty high level late in 2014 with everybody.
Yes, they did. I wouldn't say they played at a high level on Sunday after not playing with him. And now they're going into a place where, you know, Mike Zimmer's going to throw all kinds of stuff. He knows that, you know, he's got kind of a wounded animal under center, and, you know, he's going to go ahead and attack it. So it'll be interesting.
The bigger issue though, Sunday, I would say that the offense as a whole, I mean, look what the running game did. Look what AJ Dillon did. He was fine. Right. The issue Sunday is the quarterback didn't play all that well, you know? And so it was more Cassidy centered on the quarterback needing to play up to the level that he's shown that he can in the past without practice and kind of match what the offense is doing around him. That running game was on point.
True.
As you said, Spoon, they're going to head into a game on Sunday where Mike Zimmer not only knows this team and knows this personnel, but knows that he can throw a little bit more at this quarterback and probably fluster him maybe more than he could in the past. And he's going to be doing that yet again without David Bakhtiari there to protect him. We haven't even seen him at practice for the past 2 days. This is what, third, fourth practice in a row now? He hasn't been there. You know, I know our colleague Pete Doherty kept saying David Bakhtiari needs to practice for 3 days in a row as a full participant before they put him out there. He hasn't even been at practice for 3 days in a row now. Should there be legitimate concern around him? Spoon, I'll let you go first.
I think there's concern. I wouldn't jump to conclusions because ACLs are tricky recoveries. And, you know, as it pointed out, Ryan and I were talking about, you know, he was doubtful for the game on Sunday. And he wasn't out. He didn't practice on Friday and they didn't rule him out, which made me think that maybe they thought there was a chance or they were aiming towards playing him in this game, but that he had some swelling or stiffness or soreness or something that made them shut him down. And maybe it's just for a week, but maybe it's longer. And, you know, these things, knee is a tricky thing and you better have it all together if you're going to play left tackle, because you know you're putting all kinds of strain and stress on your leg.
Well, maybe it's a week or maybe it's longer is the question, right? I mean, right. Matt LaFleur was asked today if he felt there's any chance that David Bakhtiari might not play this season, and he said, "I sure as heck hope so."
Right.
So that's hope. That's optimism, perhaps. It's not yes. It's not no, but it's not yes. See, I mean, like, I thought that was really kind of startling that he didn't just say yes. Like, it's a long way to go.
Well, yeah, because yes. You just don't know. He can't. I mean, he could say yes, and then something happens.
Right.
But I would bet that they've reassessed and said, let's wait till after the bye week. You know, I'll bet you that their plan was to bring him back this week, last week. But I wouldn't bring them back on turf against Minnesota with one day of practice. And then maybe
that's something to consider. I'm sorry, I just had not even considered that. But you're right. Turf does historically cause more injuries.
Yeah, I think it's just too much pounding for his first game back.
I wonder if they would put him back on the field for part time against the Rams if his knee's feeling good, and then give him the bye week to recover from that.
I could see that.
You know, in terms of a ramp up period, I could see that as a possibility. I thought it was interesting that earlier this week that Matt LaFleur did not rule out putting him on the field in a road game. Now it looks very, very, very unlikely that David Bakhtiari is playing this week after not practicing. Right. But I don't know if that was kind of a disqualifier right off the bat, but to your point, yeah, the turf's not a good idea.
The other thing I'm always really suspicious of in a situation like this is that the guy is going to see a specialist or something just to see why it's not responding the way it should be. And I'm not saying that's what's happening, but that's my suspicion in these situations. I mean, I've seen it before.
Let's look ahead here a little bit. One of you said this, so I'm going to jump on it. About possibly bringing him back at least for a bit against the Rams. On one hand, do you want to throw a guy back out there against that defensive front seven? But on the other hand, that's when you need him. So could you see possibly just putting him out there for at least situational downs, like when they know there's going to be a heavy pass rush, like a third and long? Can you use him sparingly, but in tough situations?
I don't think they would fit and match so much as they just give him a drive here, a drive there, let him get into a rhythm. It's too tough from an offensive line standpoint to find that rhythm when you're only playing situationally. But to your point, Cassidy,
that's very rare for an offensive lineman to play situationally like a defensive lineman would. But you know, he's one of the best going against two of the best. So.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. To your point, I think it'd be a part time. I don't think it'd be situational, but you give him, you instead of giving him all the drives, you give him some of the drives, you let him work his way up. And yeah, there's no question the Packers would love to have him out there against that defensive front, right? I mean, it's not like he's going to be blocking against Aaron Donald, but it slides Elgton Jenkins inside where he might be blocking against Aaron Donald. It affects everything on the offensive line. But no, I think that it's very possible that before they throw him out there for a full game, you could see him getting some drives here and there, let him get his rhythm, feel good, not overdo it, and then build on that.
And then have the bye week to recover from it.
Potentially. It all depends on how the knee is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, we just don't know. They're not telling us. And
no.
So we don't know what the situation is. So we're just going through a bunch of hypotheticals right now.
Right. Well, that's what we do. If we didn't hypothesize, then what else would we do? Let's hypothesize a little bit more. We are heading into Minnesota with pretty much just AJ Dillon and Patrick Taylor as your two backs. Patrick Taylor got to talk today for the first time in a while. Spoon, I'm going to start with you because Ryan and I sort of talked about this earlier on the Facebook Live. Where is your, if you're the Packers, where is your confidence level at with Patrick Taylor having to supplement this running game?
I guess they're confident that he knows the offense, probably knows the blitz pickups, but the guy has not played much in an NFL game, and let alone played in US Bank Stadium, which is one of the loudest places, and you know, in a divisional game that is going to just be probably a barn burner. So I, you know, there has to be some skepticism there, and I think we're going to see a lot of AJ Dillon. And I don't know, maybe they use some Randall Cobb and Amari Rodgers in the backfield too. I don't know. It could be a little bit a combination of all those things.
Well, what did Vince Sermon say today about AJ Dillon? He feels like he can go out there and get 35 carries right now. And Vince Sermon's like, I don't know if I want him to have more than 25, like mid 20s, but it could be mid 20s. That wouldn't be a shock. And I think it does.
That's typically the sweet spot, right?
Yeah, I think it does help that they have that bye coming up. You can give a guy a more of a workload, and then you can let him recover for a week. So in that way, the late season bye kind of helps out.
But you don't want to use him too much ahead of the Rams, who have now the Tennessee Titans and the San Francisco 49ers have now proven can be run on. You're going to need him heavily, heavily for that game, even if Aaron Jones is back, correct?
Yeah. I mean, he's not going to run 35 times. He might run it 20, 25 times, and he can handle that. And Patrick Taylor's going to have to play some snaps. It's just the way it is. He's going to have to do it. And, you know, they can do a lot of empty backfield stuff. They can, leave a tight end in the backfield, have DeGuara line up next to Rodgers instead of a back. There's a lot of things they can do, but bottom line is Patrick Taylor is going to have to play.
I feel fairly confident in saying that how many carries will AJ Dillon get is a prop bet somewhere in the desert. So guys, I'll just ask you real quick. You can give or take one. So you have a one carry buffer. How many do you think he gets, Spoon?
I would say 21.
21? Okay. Ryan?
23.
Dang, that's what I was going to say. I'll say 24 then. I was going to say 23.
I think it's definitely going to be over 20, though. And I think, you know, Patrick Taylor got those two carries when Aaron Jones went out in Seattle. So he might get a couple. AJ Dillon, he's built like a Mack truck. And this is a good 2 weeks stretch here to use that. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned, Spoon, earlier the name Amari Rodgers, and I wanted to bring this up. Listeners might remember that Pete and I talked about this earlier this week on our Facebook Live. One thing that we've all noted has been sort of quote unquote missing from this offense this year is the motion, and specifically motion with a jet sweep. That's something Amari Rodgers can do. However, and this is what I want to propose to you and to get you to weigh in on, what people sometimes forget is that when you're putting the ball in a guy's hands on a jet sweep, there's no real design beyond getting him the ball and then letting him work, getting him into space and letting him do what he needs to do. It's very, very easy to lose yardage on those plays if it's not handled properly. So how much do you think not using him in that way, and then therefore that not being a part of the offensive game plan this season, is to do with a lack of trust? And that's not even necessarily a knock on Amari Rodgers. It's just the fact that he's still a rookie. Could there just simply not be that trust there yet to use him in, say, how the Giants use Kadarius Toney?
Well, Part of it is that Matt LaFleur never gives the ball to the guy on the jet sweep. The jet sweep has always been for them, for that offense, eye candy, something to distract the defense, to make the defensive end hold, so you know that they can keep that guy locked in on the edge, and then they can run it in the middle, or they can hold him from pass rushing. It's been rare. I know MVS had one, maybe. I think Equanimeous St. Brown had one. It's been really rare where they hand the ball off. So I don't think that is as much a reflection on Amari Rodgers as it is on maybe they're just not running it maybe teams aren't honoring it, and it's just not fitting what they do, because Amari Rodgers really isn't playing much at all. And I think they just realized that they got better guys than him right now.
That's fair. When I see, especially the tree that LaFleur came out of, when you see those teams use motion, so much of it does rely on the sweep. So I guess I just sort of assumed that that's what he would do as well if he had the capability and or personnel. So that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's true. Sean McVay runs those guys all the time, and he gives them the ball, but he's got guys like Robert Woods and
Robert Woods, past tense,
it's just it's been a little bit different animal for LaFleur.
Like, I see like Shanahan doing it with Debo Samuel, and when I see it, I think to myself that that's what the Packers want Amari Rodgers to be.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably true, but he's not there yet. And I don't know if the offense is there yet. They don't, his offense has morphed a little differently than Kyle Shanahan's, especially in the run game.
Well, when you look at the three of them, they're all very different, right? Because McVay is always in that 11 personnel, and nobody in the league switches up multiple like Kyle Shanahan. Yeah. And somewhere in that middle is Matt LaFleur, and that's where he's been. He'll go with that 12 and 21. But so he's not McVay. He'll do a whole lot more multiple than all the 11 that McVay does. But he's not Kyle Shanahan either.
Right, right.
It's been sort of an interesting, just from a football fan point of view, the fact that, you know, the Packers did draw the NFC West this year. So we've gotten to see those three coaches sort of in a round robin. And where I know that the Packers still have the Rams, but you've gotten to see Shanahan, McVay, and LaFleur, all what they have taken from each other and done differently. And this is kind of an audible. We didn't talk about this being on the agenda to talk about, but when you watch those three sort of all play each other this year, what do you take away from it? Where does Matt LaFleur fit into that in comparison to those two coaches? Should he be getting more credit than maybe he has been?
I think in general, Matt LaFleur, you know, he's kind of coaching an MVP, so he's in the shadow of that. I think that there's no question that he could get more credit than he's gotten. But, you know, he's very middle of the road. And the thing that Matt LaFleur will say, too, is that it's not his offense, right? It's his offense with Aaron Rodgers. It's a collaboration. It's not, so because of that collaborative nature, I don't know if we know exactly how much it is all Matt LaFleur's scheme. And what I mean by that is next year, potentially when Jordan Love is the quarterback, how differently will that look? I think it could look different than what it has.
Sure. Absolutely. So, and, you know, and I also give him credit, and Stenovich especially, they play to what they have. They don't have a wide zone running offensive line. They don't have a bunch of guys who, you know, can run that, you know, wide zone guy. And so they've adapted. You know, they've adapted to the strengths of their offensive line, of their backs, and of Rodgers. So if anything, that's what's been what I would give LaFleur the most credit.
Let's go to the other side of the ball with a coach that, from what I hear, has been better than people thought with Joe Barry and this defense. You got to speak to Barry today. What was it like just kind of hearing from him? What did he say about where this defense is right now? Which, well, guys, I believe it is fourth in scoring defense overall for the entire season. I want to say it's first over the last 3 weeks.
They are third in the NFL in defense.
Yards and points. Now, first of all, look, first things first, Joe Barry said the favorite thing I've ever heard him say today, which is that it is nonsensical to get in a car and drive 700 yards to practice. He was all bundled up when he came in. He had that stocking cap on. And I mean, it was different. Like, we don't, you know, because they're indoors when we do this. So it's not what you usually see. So, I mean, I had to ask him the only question that you could possibly ask someone in that type of, why are you bundled up? And
before you go on, there's some sort of metaphor here between Mike Pettine saying it's better to walk to, or to, it's better to fly to Miami than walk to Miami, and Joe Barry would rather walk. So
Joe Barry rides the bike. He that's his travel of choice. But He said that he rides the bike. He's ridden the bike every day to practice since training camp. And I asked him, the only natural follow-up being in Green Bay, Wisconsin, which was, what if it snows? Because it's going to snow. And I mean, I'll run in the snow. I don't know about you, Spoon. I won't ride my bike in the snow. That's treacherous, right? So he said he's going to still do it. He's like, I got good tires. And then he goes with the, it just doesn't make sense to ride my bike or to drive my car 700 yards to practice, which if you don't know, the way that players get the practice and coaches, that they drive from Lambeau Field across Oneida to either the Don Hudson Center, which they're doing more of this time of year when it's cold, or Clark Hinkle. And so he just doesn't get the point of driving 700 yards. I give Joe Barry a lot of credit just for that.
You know, I've always wondered, I've been here 2 weeks. I've wondered in the 2 weeks how the players get from the locker room to the practice facility. Honestly, I had convinced myself there was an underground tunnel. Are you telling me that's not the case?
There may be someday.
There should be.
After the stock sale?
I'm surprised there isn't.
After A.J. Dillon poured his money into it, he better get an underground tunnel.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they do. I mean,
there's probably one already there. You never know. There's tunnels under the White House, Spoon. There could be tunnels under the Packers facility.
That's right. Yep.
I'm going to go find them. But back to the defense. Rashawn Gary was out at practice today. He was a limited participant on the report. Matt LaFleur said that one of the reasons they were going to do practice the way they did was start in pads and then take it off. Was it fair to say that a large reason for doing that was to see what Rashawn Gary could take on? And with that being said, do you feel like he is at a point physically where he can play on Sunday?
I don't think they did that for Rashawn Gary. I think that was part of the plan. They wanted to get a little bit of physical stuff on the run game, maybe, and then get the pads off. But, you know, Rashawn Gary, they're testing him out. So they had some pad work, and they're testing to see how this big old brace that he's wearing on his right arm. I saw him do individual drills, and he was working pass rush. And so I think they'll determine after today and tomorrow whether he can, you know, function with that thing. I don't think there's an issue about him hurting it more. I think there's an issue of whether he can be effective.
I think we'll know tomorrow.
Yeah.
If he's out there tomorrow, then that's, you know, if he's not going to play, don't they shut him down tomorrow?
Yes. Yes. Why would you have him out there?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that they'll know tomorrow.
How important would he be this weekend versus letting him rest when you are facing a guy that's more of a pure pocket passer? Do you necessarily need as many pass rushers? Yes or no? Spoon, go.
You need him badly. You need him in a big way. And, you know, he's not going to be himself. He's not going to be able to do swim moves. And he may still be able to do his power, you know, get his hands up and into a guy's chest. But his array of moves is going to be limited.
That brace is going to be very restrictive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some things you just can't do with it. But, I mean, the way the Packers are going to look at this, it's not who they're playing. It's, is he healthy enough to play? And if he is, he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need him out there. And the opponent, frankly, doesn't factor into that at all. It's just it's his own health and if he can play or not.
Yeah, and I remember – I think you were here when Clay Matthews broke his hand and they had a big old club on it. And I think they started out by just using him on third downs and then, you know, gradually worked him back into the lineup. So I could see Rashawn Gary just playing in the nickel or dime on third downs and rushing him. So that might be what they do.
This weekend with Kirk Cousins, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, what's really going to be important is that back end. We've praised this secondary for how they've sort of come together and the chemistry they've been playing with over the past few weeks. Would it be fair to say that this will be one of their biggest tests yet? Because the past 3 weeks they've been facing mobile quarterbacks, you know, more about getting them out of the pocket and getting them flustered once they get out of the pocket. This is Cousins. He's going to drop back. He's going to send it deep to Jefferson, to Thielen. Is this going to be the biggest test this secondary has faced yet? Yes or no? And are they equipped to handle it?
I don't think you know, I don't think Justin Jefferson is that much better than Tyreek Hill. I don't know that he's more dangerous than the combination of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. But I think what is significant is that Minnesota has a star running back to go with him, and Seattle and Kansas City did not. And so you've got to pay attention to Dalvin Cook and then cover those guys. And so, yeah, that's the pressure that's going to be on the secondary.
I would say no, because, you know, 2 weeks ago they had Patrick Mahomes, and the week before that they had Kyler Murray. I think that the defensive front is going to be very, as Preston Smith said today, it's not a cardio game. I think they're going to be very happy to not be running around the field trying to chase a quarterback. Where I think that the defensive front is going to get tested this week is what Aaron Rodgers said after the Seattle game, which is the fact that this scheme has really been built on being able to stop the run with the light box and load up in the back end with athletic DBs that can, you know, load up the coverage. They're going to be really, really tested with that light box against Dalvin Cook. So from a second, from a pass defense standpoint, I think it's significantly different than the challenge of what they've gone the last 3 weeks. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. Kyler Murray has been an MVP candidate. Kirk Cousins is not that. And Dalvin Cook is a running back that they haven't faced. So it's much more that the test is on the ground this week than in the air.
Okay. That's a formidable test when you have those two receivers and you think they're not even your biggest threats.
It's the combination. It's that you can't sit back and just cover Justin Jefferson, play zone all day long, because right. Dalvin Cook will chew you up. Where the Packers have hurt the Vikings in the past is up the middle. Kenny Clark, Za'Darius Smith. I mean, they sort of made a living rushing Za'Darius Smith up the middle against Minnesota. Minnesota's never had a center that could handle it. And, you know, their current center, Garrett Bradbury, is he on COVID or he's hurt? And they may bring him back this week. They may bring, you know, their backup Mason Cole. But either way, Kenny Clark has been working some centers over, you know, some backup centers and less than great centers. And this will be a great matchup for him again.
It's really no different than in the past when you'd have Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, and the key to stopping that Vikings offense was Dalvin Cook.
Yeah.
And it's just you put in Justin Jefferson where Stephon Diggs used to be. The key to stopping that offense is still Dalvin Cook, and that's really where they want to be tested.
That's fair. Preston Smith did say this week, he said, Dalvin Cook pretty much won them the game last year. If he could have kicked field goals, he would have completely won them the game.
That was a good line.
That was a great line. So as you said, stopping him would be key. I saw a video today just in reference to Kenny Clark and getting guys back there. I saw a video today that someone posted of Clark and TJ Slayton getting after Russell Wilson. And the left guard sort of whipped his head around when he realized how fast Slayton got past him. I think it shocked him. Could there be enough depth there to get them through this game while they are still waiting for injured guys to come back?
I think their defensive line is in good shape. I think that's where maybe they're in their best shape, because they can bring, you know, Slayton has kind of developed a little bit. Dean Lowry's been playing out of his mind. You know, Clark, they may get Kingsley Keke back this week. I think that's where they have to win. They have to win with their defensive front.
That's why they stop in the run with a light box, is why the defensive line's playing so well, you know, and it's taken forever to get the supporting cast around Kenny Clark. It is a long time coming. But this season, it's like they're all having career years. I mean, Dean Lowry's playing the best he's ever played. Tyler Lancaster's playing, you know, the run like he usually does, and they're supporting on the defensive line. But when you're able to play the way that they are up and down the defensive line, it takes off so much pressure and allows you to load up on the pass the way they have.
Well, guys, I know that our final predictions will be in the paper this week, but without giving a score, just kind of take me through what you think this game will come down to and what you see it becoming. Ryan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot to be said this week about how the Packers have won a lot of close games and the Vikings have lost a lot of close games. And so maybe the Vikings are actually better than what their record shows at 4-5. And maybe the Packers aren't quite as good as what their record shows, because 8-2 could very easily be less. I don't look at that that way. You know, what separates good and bad teams in this league is the ability to win close games. This league is built on parity. If you make the plays at the end of the game, or those 3 to 5 plays during the course of a game to put yourself in a winning position, that's what makes you a good team. If you don't, that's what makes you a bad team. So from a talent standpoint, being on the road, not having the crowd noise this year, unlike last season, which was, I think, Spoon, one of the most eerie games certainly I've ever covered, I'm sure, no question, for you as well. No, it's going to be more normal, right? So that the crowd and the environment can be a bit of an equalizer. If this is a close game, and it could be a close game, you've got a Packers team that's made the plays all season in close games to win, and you've got a Vikings team that has not made the plays all season in a close game to lose. Not to say that that'll history repeat itself, but the Packers will be very, very comfortable in that type of situation.
Yeah. I think it comes down to matching Minnesota's intensity right out of the gate. If the Packers, and mostly Vikings defense versus Packers offense, I think if they're just, you know, their tails are on fire and they're getting off the ball and taking advantage of the noise, and they're getting after Rodgers, which is a real possibility, then this game will be real tough, will be real hard for the Packers to win. I just think Minnesota's on a little bit of a roll. So the Packers have to find a way to shut them up right away. You know, that first drive, second drive, they got to have a nice long drive, keep the crowd out of it, and make the Vikings defense kind of pay for its aggressiveness.
Yeah. I think that when you have teams that are in close games, what can so often make a difference is special teams. I don't know if I would favor the Packers in that area.
No.
Against anybody at this point.
But to Ryan's point, at the same time, the difference between a good and a bad team is knowing how to win those games. So far this year, Green Bay has shown that they can. We will be there to cover it for you through it all. We will all be in Minneapolis this weekend. Stick with Packers news the rest of this week and this weekend as we cover the Packers versus the Vikings in a crucial divisional game. This has been the Green 19 Podcast with JS Online and PackersNews.com.